on House Bill 5012. And should we have Debbie Lincoln and Greg?
Just for your information, because we don't have a quorum yet, we thought we'd just go ahead and do the informational part of each of these budgets, and then when we get a quorum, we can move into work session on all of them. So doing it slightly different than before.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. The first budget up this morning is the Building Codes Division. Joe Brewer is here to answer any questions. I put on your place is a handout, again, the same kind of handout we've had before. It's pages out of your budget book. And page labeled 178 is the Building Codes budget. We start with a $22.5 million legislatively adopted budget. This base budget dropped to $22.0 million from 166.7 FTEs to 157.5, and that's accounted for by the fact that we had a number of limited duration positions on board during this coming this past biennium, which, because they are limited duration, go away at the end of the biennium, and we're not replacing them. The essential packages are similar to the ones you've seen before, brings us down to a $20 million base budget request. The only policy package in this budget is the $1.8 million add-back, which we discussed yesterday with Senate Bill 287, taken by the need for the structural mechanical fee increase. Brings us up to a $22.4 million total requested budget, assuming that bill continues on through the process and comes out with 157.5 FTE, and we request your approval of that budget.
Any questions?
I noticed package 192 not in the governor's budget, and I presume that it's not going to be funded. The seismic survey?
Madam Chair, Senator Cho, let me ask Joe to explain that to you. That was something that we had looked at. We had no funding source for it. We had talked about general fund. Of course, it wasn't going to get very far in budget discussion, so that's one reason why it's not included in the governor's budget. We have looked at ways to do it internally without and
good.
With the cities and counties.
I was going to say, it seems to me like that we just need to know more about the possibilities, so that maybe, because they say that some kind of seismic occasion, a severe one, is likely to happen in our future sometime, and we ought to know more about, you know, the possibilities.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Joel Brewer. I'm the administrator of the Building Codes Division. Madam Chair, Senator Crow, you're correct. There are exposures, risk out there with respect to seismic events. We've learned a great deal about Oregon's geology and its history. This package would have called for an inventory of structures in a limited number of counties so that we could begin to understand what that risk implies. The city of Portland, for instance, is to be appraised for its efforts in this area. It's already begun to upgrade hospitals, schools, and they're well along in that process. And just recently, as I'm sure you've read in the paper, we learned more about the risk in the Portland area. So we're going to continue as a division to emphasize working on this. We're going to look for a grant opportunity such as from FEMA, and hopefully we'll be bringing back an effort in future sessions that will allow us to make some progress in this area.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Williams?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a question on your reserve, that you keep in reserve, you're increasing it from 5.7 to 6.2. Your ending balance. Is there...
Madam Chair, Representative Winters, on page 179, the beginning balance is listed at 5.7. You go down to the 99-2001 ending balance, it's at 4.1, so it actually drops.
This indicates
6.2.
I think you need to.
I see. I'm sorry. I'm looking at a revised page. We got a handout. We on the page on your at the place. You're right. The original one had a 6.2. $6 million ending balance. We've revised that based on expected revenue. So
get the current replacement.
Okay.
I'm sure. What about that ending balance, Debbie? Is that okay?
Madam Chair, Senator Trell, it is a little low. It's a little lower than the at least 6 months that we'd like to keep. And in this program, because we have, you might put to, let's see, the third page in your handout, you'll see all the programs that we budget by, the electrical elevator and so forth, have to have, all have their fees dedicated, so the ending balance is calculated for each of those. Some of those are in fairly good shape. Plumbing ending balance, for example, is up where we want it to be. Some of them are a little bit low.
That's a total amount. You can't shift within the total because each one has its own balance, and so an individual agency could be in trouble and the rest of them find you can't shift.
That's correct, Commissioner. And we do keep a very close eye on those. The electrical, for example, it has a pretty low ending balance, and we do manage the fees to keep that.
Assume that you can come to the e-board if one of the agency's fees get in trouble and the reserve is gone. You can come and tell the story.
Senator Cho, yeah, we certainly could report to the e-board. We do have most of these. We've got authority to manage the fees internally, but we would certainly want to let everybody know what it is we're doing and how we're managing those.
Okay. Thank you, Helen.
Thank you. Any other questions? We'll go to the next budget.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the next budget is the Workers' Compensation Board. Maureen Boss, the chair of the board, is joining me. That, too, is on a handout in front of you. A fairly simple budget. We start with a $16.3 million budget approved and base budget. The only decision package in this budget reduces staff based on workload decreases projected, 6 FTE to come up with a $15.7 million request.
Any questions on that budget?
Mr. Chair, number of personnel changes in this budget. Is that true?
Senator Trow, yes, we are dropping. Well, let me ask Maureen to explain that decision package to you.
Mr. Chair, Senator Trow, I'm Maureen Bach. I'm the chair of the Workers' Compensation Board. Yes, we are asking to reduce staff based on decreased workloads. We went through a Secretary of State audit that validated our model for staffing our hearings division, and based on that model, it showed that we could decrease staff.
Okay. Can you do that without reducing services to injured
yes.
workers?
Yes.
That you will still be as conscientious and dedicated to their needs as before with limited staff?
This is actually a fairly conservative reduction. It looks at requests for hearings coming into the hearings division, and those have been very stable since the last major legislative changes.
Thank you.
Anybody else? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, the next division is the Workers' Compensation Division. Mary Nydick is the administrator of that budget. We have a $32 million base budget here. We have actually several policy packages. Two of them are reduction packages. One to eliminate the claims closure process, which was Senate Bill 220 and has gone entirely through the legislative process, I think, at the House floor, isn't it? And we expect passage of that. The other is a reduction or an elimination of the claims examiner certification program, which would also eliminate one staff person. And that, too, has gone through the entire process. The third package is a 2 FTE increase in the Workers' Compensation Ombudsman's Office. This is workload-driven. We've had quite a bit of increased business, partly because we've done a lot more outreach in the last biennium or two, particularly among Spanish-speaking folks, and have seen an increase in inquiries and need for help from that community.
I'm sure that activity, Mr. Chair, that activity doesn't reflect on claim closure issues, does it? Increased activity there as you step back here.
Mr. Chair, Senator Kerr, no, we don't think it would, though. The issue of claim closures is always something that the workers' comp ombudsman deals with, but we don't think that will drive up the workload in the ombudsman's office.
I'm a little not comfortable with all this change, but maybe it'll work.
I'll certainly report back to you next biennium how it all comes out.
I think once the insurance company start doing this, well, it'll probably stay there. But I hope it works to the benefit of the workers.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Chair, we're certainly going to keep an eye on that, and that's our concern, too.
Representative Winter?
Just a comment. This individual that I have introduced, a study that we will do during the interim to look at all of the ombudsman's activities in the state and Mike is aware, so just so the members of this board know that, and the governor's office is also.
Sounds good.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, there are a couple of issues related to this budget. One we had spoken about before, that's the central hearings panel. That bill came out of Ways and Means subcommittee yesterday and is on its way to the floor. The other issue is that there was discussion between this agency and the American Medical Association, or the Oregon Medical Association, having to do with a medical director position, which the agency has abolished. I've added a budget note or a budget comment, or an on-the-record comment anyway, about an agreement that the agency has entered into with the Oregon Medical Association having to do with evaluating the need for that position, and I thought perhaps the agency might want to speak to that just briefly.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Mary Knight, the administrator of the Workers' Comp Division. Yes, we did eliminate the medical director position during the biennium. We did that for three primary reasons, and I'll be happy to share more with you about that if you would like to hear about that. It is not included in your proposed budget, the governor's proposed budget in front of you. Elimination of that position allowed us to create three other lower cost positions within the agency to provide better services, more direct services to injured workers. So that was one of the primary reasons that we made that decision. We have had discussions with the OMA, and we are quite comfortable that we can have a discussion about that during the interim and address some of the concerns that the OMA has been raising. That's why we would be comfortable with the recommendation for the budget comment that you have in front of you.
Thank you.
Edward. Near the bottom of the handout, under package 135 is non-limited. There's a payment to Oregon Health Sciences University Center for Research of $3 million+. Is that a one-time thing? Is that going to be more or less ongoing, or what would you anticipate?
Mr. Chair, Representative Backlund, that is an ongoing payment. We have that every biennium. The center is funded jointly out of the Workers' Benefits Fund and out of the assessment funds that fund this budget.
Mm-hmm.
And it is non-limited because it's a percentage of the assessment that we collect. So whatever we collect is that percentage and goes to them.
I'm sure.
Chair Troll?
Would you refresh our minds again? Why does the OMA think that we need a medical director, and why is it that you believe services can be better handled differently?
I guess, Madam Chair, Senator Trow, I certainly would not speak directly for the OMA. I know one of the concerns that we have been discussing is the interest of the medical community to have an avenue to give medical input into our decision making.
So you think that's if they want to bring a kind of thinking that perhaps is not there otherwise without a medical director?
Senator, why don't we have Jim Anderson share? Maybe he can help and address.
Okay,
he's with the
OMA. He representing the OMA?
Yes. Jim, would you like to come up and?
Did you plan to go into this, or did I open up that?
No, it was I got it.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Jim Anderson with the Oregon Medical Association. Thank you for this opportunity. I'm going to take this time and be very brief and let you know where the OMA is on this. With me today is Dr. Fred Kiley from Salem, and he would like to share with you some of his thoughts also. But some of the things that you need to know is this position, to my knowledge, was vacated June of 1998. Dr. Mark Melgard was the most recent occupant of this medical director position. We began by trying to put language together for a budget note. I talked to staff and talked to the division, and it was evident that a budget note at this time and of this type would be very, very difficult. So the comment that staff mentioned and that you have in front of you has been agreed to by all the parties, including the OMA. We acknowledge that it is very hard to find a qualified person to do this. We feel that within the budget description, within the position description, which you have in front of you, it shows a 90-10 split. This shows that the person occupying the position of medical director advises the division and also represents the division before certain forums, symposiums, conferences, and probably works as a speaker for the division. But more importantly, we feel this needs to be a qualified person to communicate with health practitioners in the field. They got to be able to walk the walk and talk the talk. It's hard to find a person to fill this position. We know that. With those few comments, I would ask Dr. Kiley to tell you what it's like from the field.
Yes, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Frederick W. Kiley. I'm an orthopedic and spine practitioner in Salem. I've been here for 30 years. As an orthopedist and particularly as a spine person, I spent a lot of time treating injured workers. And in addition, over the years, I've been involved in advising the Workers' Comp Division, either directly or indirectly. Most recently, indirectly, because Mark Melgard, who stepped down from that position last year, is a friend, compatriot, and patient of mine. And so I've gotten to know a lot more about just exactly what his position, when he was in it, represented. And I was quite chagrined when he stepped down and he told me that the division had suggested that they were not going to replace. I felt that was very short-sighted. I think all of my comments can really be summed up in one very important comment, and that is that it seems unreasonable to me that advice to the workings of the Workers' Comp Division, medical advice, medical opinions, liaison with the other physicians, is done by non-medical people. I don't think it works. It's inefficient. I think it's unproductive. And it would be likened to me going to get legal advice from, shall we say, someone who's never been to law school. And so I don't think it's a good idea. I looked through the distribution of duties formerly assigned to the medical director, and every one of them, in my estimation, can be better handled by having a medical person doing that as opposed to someone that's not a medical person. I'd be very open to questions.
Chair, Mr. Chair, I'm interested in knowing whether or not those duties and the liaison you talk about is a necessary part of dealing with the workers, and whether or not maybe the communication is there and a doctor can do it better, but what about the necessity of doing that, and how does that redound to a better operation? Can you address that?
Yes. For instance, one of the very important things that I think the medical director gets involved with is studies that have to do with outcome. This is the important buzzword in medicine these days. Basically, what we're saying is, in order to get your best bang for the buck, so to speak, we want to know what outcomes are all about, and therefore adjustments can be made. I think it's impossible for someone who is not medical to be able to evaluate outcome studies. Now, I'm sure that the workers' comp division would be able to contract with someone to do that. Okay, I'm sure that could happen. But it would fragment, as far as I'm concerned, what workers' comp division is doing with reference to not only outcomes, but with reference to many other things. It just seems to me that if the medical community knows that there's one individual and that individual is responsible in both directions, okay, and has the expertise to do the things that are necessary, to be able to render an opinion quickly, to be a medical opinion quickly, to be able to do the liaison work that's necessary between the medical community, the OMA, the legislature, and workers' comp division, I think that one person does that much better than trying to piecemeal some sort of a program together.
Can we hear the other side of it?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Trow. I don't want to minimize the concerns that Dr. Tiley and the OMA have raised. We are very interested in the medical perspective and how we make medical decisions. For those of you who are not aware, we have a statutory medical advisory committee, which is an organization of providers that gives advice to the director, primarily to the workers' comp division, on medical issues. And our thought was, when we made the decision to abolish the position, that we can put together, assemble a variety of medical providers who are treating injured workers, who can give us medical advice and medical perspective from many different specialties in many different parts of the medical community. So we were looking to the Medical Advisory Committee to be our primary source of medical perspective and medical advice, and that's why we felt comfortable with making the decision that we made.
Yeah, just two questions. One about the quality of the advice from a committee vis-a-vis that advice from a single expert. And you can relate to that, so it's the quality of the advice. And then also the point made that you need someone who can better communicate with the medical profession, and one person can do that better than a committee. Do you want to respond to those two things?
I'd be happy to, Madam Chair, Senator Trow. On the first question about the quality, I guess we had thought of it in terms of having different perspectives coming together for some kind of advice. It doesn't have to be a consensus opinion by the committee. It can be two or three varied opinions or two or three varied recommendations from the committee. Again, we felt that by having a diverse panel of medical providers, we give a little broader perspective. no matter who we hire for the medical director position, and it has been vacant a good amount of the time, no matter who we hire, there's still going to be one specialty or one perspective. And by having the panel approach, we were hoping to get a more balanced or a more broader perspective. To your second point.
Now, who can communicate best with the medical profession?
Thank you. I think you could easily say that one person is better situated to communicate to the community. If that happens through my office or through the elected representatives of the Medical Advisory Committee, I think it can happen in various ways.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Madam Chair, if I might respond to those questions for the OMA. I think it's important for the committee to know that there's a bill going through the process now. It is on the House floor. Senate Bill 222 that deals directly with the Medical Advisory Committee. If the bill passes through the process, there is a good likelihood that the makeup of this committee will change greatly during this next biennium. So that leaves a very large question mark, we believe, as to what the effectiveness and availability to the director of the division, how this committee will work. We feel we were instrumental in getting the changes in it. We feel it will be a better committee, better represented to the workers, to the division, and by the practitioners. Also, what we hope to do with this piece that staff developed was to begin at this point, since the medical director's position has been abolished, now we can start establishing a record, to start communication with the division during the interim, and bring this issue back to the legislature for the 71st Legislative Assembly.
Yes, Representative
Ross. Mr. Anderson, do you believe that this has to be a full-time position, or do you think that a part-time position of a person who had, for instance, been retired and wanted to only work part-time, do you think that would be effective? They have had a hard time recruiting a full-time person at the salary available.
Madam Chair, Representative Ross, yes, I think that, again, this is something that we need to explore. But so you will know, I think the division, and Ms. Knighty can speak to this, but the division established this, and I think you can only establish it through budget, thinking of a full-time position. However, Dr. Melgard, when he came toward the last few months, days of his time in that position, it was not 5 days a week. He was there, he has comments to me, 3 and 4 days a week at times. So it developed for him into part-time. And he is retired, so it was part-time for him.
So just to clarify that, if there were an agreement worked out where we would have an MD there on a part-time basis with the duties prescribed, and that would not be objectionable to the OMA.
Again, Madam Chair, Representative Ross, it's something that we certainly could put into the mix as far as discussion. I think it's a very good point.
Thank you.
Representative Edgett?
Just briefly, when was this position created?
Madam Chair, Representative Edwards, it was created in the mid-60s. We used to have in Oregon a state-run rehabilitation center near Portland called the Callahan Center, and the medical director was the person in charge of that center for the medical staff. So the medical director really was the head of that program and had a fairly substantial staff of doctors and nurses and so on. So that was the framework for the medical director for Oregon during the 70s and the 80s. The Callahan Center was closed in 1984, and this is really the final remnant of that medical structure.
Any other questions? Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, that's the end of our presentation on the Workers' Comp Division. We have to answer any further questions. Are there any other questions on the Workers' Comp Division? Let's move on to Central Support. Central Support is the last division, Madam Chair. On your page, you'll see that we are a $27 million budget. This unit is comprises of the business functions for the entire department, accounting, purchasing, mail, property management, all those kinds of things. The entire technology, information technology, and research function for the department, and Dan Adelman is here with me to discuss the policy package that we have, and the personnel function for the entire department. We have centralized all those. It's funded by a charge back to the division, so each of the divisions pays based on the amount of services it receives, and our budget is built based on very careful accounting of the services that are required. Again, a $27 million budget. We're requesting a package of four people for applications development and in the Information Management Division, $760,515 to bring it up to $28.6 million. We have 182 FTE with that package and request your approval.
Any questions, Jackie? Representative Williams, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a question, since it's a development activity, are you planning for this to be a one-time only, or will that?
Madam Chair, I'm Dan Adelman, the Administrator of the Information Management Division. Representative Winter's question. No, this is not a one-time request. We have a significant backlog of requests for technology and application development within the agency. And we're trying to use technology to become much more efficient in our processes, in reengineering how we do our work, and to use technology to its greatest extent within the agency.
At what point do you anticipate the development phase and to cease and you're in operation?
Madam Chair, Representative Winters, I don't believe we'll see a point where we cease development. With all the changes that happen every session, there's always additional application development modifications that go on. In addition, the divisions are looking for better ways of doing business with our customers. And
I guess I'm trying to get it. Is this a startup here of a new activity, or is it adding on to an existing activity?
Madam Chair, Representative Winters, it's adding on to an existing activity, yes.
We want to get the right information to the right people at the right time. Now, there must be a problem of not doing that now if we're going to have four people to look at the technology to do that better. What's the problem now?
Madam Chair, Senator Trove, what we're trying to do is improve our operations as we're currently doing them. We have opportunities through the internet.
Flow? Do we have a backlog? What's the problem?
Senator Crow, yes, we do have a backlog of application development requests. Many of these are to improve our operations in the department so we can get information to our customers quicker. So information that comes into the department can be entered into our computer systems, and staff will have access to that information more quickly.
And that make better decisions with the right information. And
yes, that's correct.
And we need to do this.
Yes, yes, we do.
Representative Gwinnett?
Thank you, Madam Chair. You have one category of contracted collection to do in writing on what that is.
Madam Chair, Representative Winters, yes, we have a collection group that collects debts owed to the state, people who owe workers' comp assessments, so, you know, a whole variety of people who owe money.
But we do also, when our folks reach the end of their toolbox contract with either a private collection agency or the Department of Revenue to go the next step, they have more tools. So that's what that is. That's our payment to mostly Department of Revenue to collect debts owed to the agency.
Follow up. So when revenues collect, are they collecting the debt on your behalf?
Madam Chair, Representative Wonders, yes.
And then you're paying them after they collect the full debt?
Representative Winters, I think we pay 15% a percentage of the debt that they collect,
they collect.
And then we get the rest of the revenue. That's correct.
So then you receive the rest of the revenue after the collection.
That's right.
Madam Chair, just for
interest.
Again, back to option package 171. You're saying it's going to take four people to do what you want to do. Is that correct? To get to the backlog, and is that the primary goal of this group?
Madam Chair, Representative Edwards, the package includes a number of different projects that we want to work on. Two of the positions are for application development. That's for our major information systems within the department. One of the positions is to coordinate our internet activities and our presence with the World Wide Web. And that will allow us to get our information out on the internet so that the public can access, have access to our databases and learn more about what the department does and have access to information such as who's licensed to do business, which of our companies in the state have workers' compensation coverage and things like that.
Just to follow on, are there hardware costs as well embedded in this? This is not just FTE expenditure that we're seeing.
Representative Edwards, let me speak to that. There are hardware costs included. I'm recommending that $250,000 of those hardware costs be unscheduled by the Department of Administrative Services until we know for sure exactly what that equipment is going to cost.
You know, follow up to that statement. So that means $250 out of the $760.
That's correct.
So the balance of that is basically the cover cost of FTE, is that? And some additional hardware?
That's correct. Okay. It's a combination of both.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay. Madam Chair, that concludes our presentation.
Okay, let me just do you feel you can work with the proposal that's been brought forward by LFO to unschedule this portion of the hardware until you have definite prices on how much it's going to cost?
Madam Chair, Representative Ross, that was actually Dan's suggestion to LFO, so yes, we do.
Okay, so this doesn't create undue hardship for you?
It's not.
Is anything else in LFO's recommendations create an undue hardship?
And Chair Representative Ross, we've worked real closely with Robin and pleased with what she's recommended.
And what?
I'm pleased with what she has recommended.
We're happy to hear that.
375.
Just wanted to give you an opportunity to explain.
Representative Winters?
I'm back to the debt collection issue, because if you're paying revenue $250,000. That means your debt is over about $3.75 million that's been collected.
I'll have to look at. I think they're good. It's close to that, Representative Winters. It's mostly non-compliant employers, and we do have, you know, it's a running debt. We collect and more comes in, so we are running about that level, I believe. It goes to revenue, but we could find an exact figure for you.
Could you find for me the exact figure and also the length of time of the debt?
Yes, we'll do that, Representative.
Thank you.
Sorry to belabor this. One last thing, just to refresh my memory. When you look at the legislatively adopted budget, and I'm looking at the handout you handed out, in 1997-99, you had 172.3 FTE. And then the base budget had 178. What was the increase there? E-board data?
Madam Chair, Representative Edwards, yeah, there are, we brought over 5.7 FTE or six positions four of those came from the Office of Energy when we integrated. We brought two personnel positions, two accounting positions. One, we brought in a position from another area in the department that didn't need it to manage the department, centralize the department's telephone management effort, which when we bought a new system last year, became imperative that we have somebody who understood that and was on point all the time. And the last piece of that was to increase a 0.3 FTE up to full time.
Thank you.
Other questions?
Representative Brock and members of the committee, there's one other issue that we can discuss in public hearing, and I think Representative Edwards can speak to that. It's a comment that he wanted made on the record having to do with Internet security.
Thank you. And that's on LFO's recommendation on the second page under the Finance and Corporate Securities. I think there was some discussion not only brought by me but some other members of the committee over the concern of the growing use of the Internet for trading, and I just wanted to have put into the record here that the Finance and Corporate Securities Division would look at the potential risks and to Oregonians in using this as a way to invest. And I spoke to the division yesterday, and they were more than willing to do this over the interim and report back what's happening both nationally and also what we as a state might look at as what are some of the things we might be concerned about with that.
Comment on that?
Madam Chair and Representative Edwards, this is something that we're excited about doing too. It's a very important piece of protection for consumers, and we'll certainly do that, and we'll keep Representative Edwards up to date during the interim as well on our activities.
Robin, you've got a question?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Back to Package 171. Worst case scenario, what if none of this happened? What would happen to the central support?
Madam Chair, Representative Backlund, we would be somewhat hampered, quite a bit hampered, particularly in our web efforts. There are projects that we would like to get going on. One is electronic data interchange with the insurance companies, but they are very insistent that we get going on in the next biennium. It's those kinds of major applications that we would not be able to get to during this coming year if we don't have those positions.
Debbie, would you say is this a want or a need?
Madam Chair, Representative Backlund, I'd have to say it's a need. I think given the customers that we have, they're going to an awful higher, more complex, more sophisticated level of technology. We're dealing with insurance companies and banks and folks who are on the web who are automating themselves, their own processes. If we continue to have, for example, a basement full of workers' comp files, which we do, and request everything from insurance companies in by paper, we will soon have them in here asking for your direction to us to go to electronics. In fact, that's a meeting Mary Nidig was having with Liberty Mutual yesterday. Their insistence that we get moving toward a lot more electronic exchange rather than paper exchange. The web position that's in this package is on board as a limited duration. It's been absolutely necessary to get our web page up and keep it current. One example that the Appraiser Certification and Licensure Board put all its licensees on the web and cut its phone calls down by 80% because banks are its main customers of that line, and they now have that at their fingertips. If we don't have a web position, we can't continue to keep that up to date add new information as it comes out. So I think it's a need.
And that couldn't be done, say, with two people. I'm thinking, like, in the overall scheme of things, in the big picture, of putting together a budget for the entire state of Oregon, I'm wondering where this would fit in on a priority basis. we were prioritizing point after point or item after item.
Representative Backlund, if I could refer you, and this may help, to the final handout that I gave you, which is the summarization of the actions that we've taken with this agency budget. If you look at the top of the page where I've done a summary of the budget history, you'll see that the FTE in this agency is not increasing over its legislatively approved or its estimated FTE. So even though it appears from some of the budget packages that we have been doing these huge increases, the fact of the matter is the bottom line within the agency is that there is not that growth. These are adjustments within the agency overall. So we just saw, for example, from the Workers' Compensation Board that they're cutting positions, and then there are some adjustments in some of the other programs so that you have a net action within the agency that is pretty flat.
Is this another funds expenditure?
This is also another funds expenditure, but for the overall state of the agency is not growing just by any.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I was kind of coming to this from some comments we made when I was teaching. Certain people were absent. There had to be a substitute. There was a time when one person was called to jury duty back in the old days when, in this case, it took about 5 to 6 weeks for this person to serve in the jury duty, and we never even knew he was gone. So we have to wonder about the need on that thing. So I brought that up because that's an actual question. And I think probably you've answered the question quite well. I'm satisfied, I think. But I do think sometimes it's difficult to look at the overall budget and prioritize because there's so much out there. And so anyway, I was just in particular about a framework of our mood, and I thought I'd bring all that.
Thank you. Well, I think the comment on staff's comment about a reduction, a lot of that is a transfer out to the central hearing, so some of that reduction is reflected.
Representative Edwards, that's the total, what I was referencing was the total FTE within the agency. So any transfers between programs, that would be, the reductions would be in addition to any transfers. So the transfers are between programs within the agency.
Just to follow, I mean, I guess I'm sort of following the line of Representative Backlund. I mean, if you put in 4 FTE, that will obviously drive more costs over time. And if your recommendation is to cut $250,000 out of here, and we're not talking about a lot of money either. I guess it's the policy of 4 FTE for this position or positions to do these functions. Would it make some sense to gradually ramp that up rather than, I don't know, I'm just, the 4 FTEs is kind of, I'm not comfortable with that number.
Let me make a recommendation that we request the department to make them limited duration and to report back the next biennium on whether or not there's any ongoing need for the positions. Would that help?
What you just said makes some sense to me, but is that generally effective? Does that work pretty well to report back to the biennium and you get some accountability?
Sheriff, if I could answer. The answer is that if these positions are limited duration, they will not be able to carry them forward in their current service level. They will have to identify them again and request them again. So there is accountability that would be tied to that.
Yeah, they can do well at cost.
Madam Chair, but his question is, do we ever do away with limited duration positions that we put limited duration positions just for the purpose of checking back?
Very seldom.
Very seldom.
It makes people feel good, however.
But sometimes the task is a specific task that's going to end.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Madam Chair, that's why I raised the question, is this an ongoing activity, or are we starting up an activity and adding to the ongoing? Because I think it makes a distinct difference when you're starting up a program and if you have an ongoing activity. And so you may need more individuals to get something started, or you might need less to maintain. And so
Any other comments? Well, if you want to look at maybe what would happen if this was in the
The question is, what would be the impact if we reduce that request by 2 FTE?
Madam Chair, I think that would have a fairly significant impact on the agency. We initially started in our budgeting process within the agency with 10, requesting 10 positions to support our information technology within the department. I have to realize these positions support all the programs within the department, the 1,200 staff within our agency. And there's a large number of programs within our within the agency, and it requires continuing support. The divisions have actually asked, and our publics have asked for more technology support, as Debbie was talking about, for example, the insurance companies with electronic data transmission. And we're behind in what we can do to make the agency more efficient and the systems more efficient. As I say, that's a cutback. We already cut back from 10 to 4. Two would cut our services back even more, and we just couldn't do as much as what the demand is.
Representative, what other projects are you planning to add on in addition to the one that affects insurance?
There are a number of different web projects that we have on the drawing board. For example, all of our licensing programs, there's been requests to do have an Internet presence there where renewals and applications for licensing could be done over the Internet. They wouldn't have to submit the paperwork directly. They could do it online. We've had other projects where we track a number of different activities within the agency. For example, within Oregon OSHA, a lot of their training and their consultations, where we need to track who they're having contact with and in their training, who attends those training sessions so we can have better contact with both workers and employers in the state. We also have a number of projects on the Internet where we want to get access to our databases. For example, in workers' compensation, there's a large number of out in the public, including the insurers, who would like to have online access to who's covered, which employers are covered. A lot of employers are not covered. The non-compliant employers increase the cost for those employers who are covered. So with this coverage information that's available on the web, we know who's covered and who's not covered. When a claim is filed, for example, a lot of times either the doctors or the worker doesn't know who the insurance company is, and they have to call either into our department or to the insurance company trying to figure out who has coverage for that particular employer. And with this information available on the web, they could go to their computer and get instant access. For licensees, for example, if you want to know appraisers as an example, insurance agents, licensed contractors, those things we can put onto the web, onto the Internet, and make available to the public.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm hearing a lot of concern about what the agency's technology plan is. I'd like to suggest that we provide them with 2 positions, that we request that they come back to the Information Management and Technology Committee with a plan, that the committee review that plan, and then based on that review that they come to the emergency board and request limitation for the remaining 2 positions and have those positions be limited duration. Would that work?
Okay. I think that's
okay.
Which may feel more comfortable with that.
All right.
Any other questions?
Madam Chair.
A lot of work for you guys.
I'd appreciate it if staff would just very briefly go reiterate the FTE numbers. I've got 1,208 FTE. Is that correct?
that is the, that, before we just made this, this decision, yes, that would have been the correct number.
And so this, with this, it will be 1206. We're getting into and withholding two, is that correct?
That's correct. Keep in mind, Madam Chair, members of the committee, that 1208 includes six positions that are being actually being transferred to the hearings unit. So those six positions would also be reduced. And so what you will end up with, if my math is correct, is that it would be that we would end up with 1,200 positions.
Madam Chair, Robin, on that, this continues to be confusing to me about the Central Hearings Unit because I know we've identified those positions in each budget, but when the ultimate, if everything goes as is planned, will those FTE actually be in the Employment Division or will they be in this department with a contract with employment? Where will those FTEs technically reside?
They will, Representative Ross, they will technically reside with the employment department, but they will physically reside with the agency. And the agency will contract with the employment department for those services. But the FTE will leave this agency. They will physically become part of it.
But the bodies will still be in her shop?
That's correct.
Warn your hand down.
I thought it was the other way. I missed the boat. Okay. Thank you. Work on it later.
Thank you, Representative Ross.
Where are the bodies buried?
The body stuff.
Any other questions? Okay.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, in the interest of time, what I would like to recommend that we do is that I'll walk through my individual recommendations on each of these remaining divisions, and then wait and do my summary of the budget overall and let you vote to adopt the budget overall based on those recommendations. If that's okay, we'll skip the votes on each of the individual programs.
Okay.
All right. My handout that summarizes each of the agency or the divisions, very briefly, I'm recommending with building codes that we approve their package, approve their current service level, approve package 191, which restores the 1.8 million and 12.7 FTE based on the passage of Senate Bill 287, with the caveat that if 287 doesn't pass, we'll ask Department of Administrative Services to unschedule those funds so that the department won't have excess limitations. I'm recommending that we reduce the governor's budget by $122,389 for actual expenditure patterns, reduce the budget $1,586 for attorney general rate reductions, reduce the budget by $199,702 to reflect vacancy rate projections, and with that, approve a program budget of $21,870,465 other funds, $235,450 non-limited other funds, with a note that the agency should alert the emergency board if individual program revenues drop below projected needs.
Robin?
Yeah.
I think I need to get on a little session on that.
Oh, yes, you do.
There we go.
Okay, close the public hearing and open the work session. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
I thought we were in work session. So those are my recommendations on the building code division, unless anybody wants me to go back and reread them.
No.
Workers' Compensation Board approved the current service level. Approved package 121 that reduces the budget by 704,119 and 6 FTE due to reductions in workload. Reduced the budget by 134,903 to reflect 18-month actual expenditures. Reduced the budget by 339 for attorney general rate reductions. Reduced the budget by 41,706 to reflect actual vacancy rate projections. And with that, approve a program budget of 15,590,087 other funds and 98.5 FTE. For the Workers' Compensation Division, approve the current service level, add a comment relative to the work that the division and the Oregon Medical Association are going to do during the interim on the medical director position and request them to report on that activity. Amend package 131, which was Senate Bill 220 to eliminate the claims closure process. That bill was amended in committee. As a result, the net reduction is 373,474 and 9.25 FTE. Approved package 132, which is Senate Bill 221, to eliminate the claims examiner certification package. That's 113,378 and 1 FTE.
Does that function just discontinue?
Madam Chair, Senator Tro, my understanding is that there may be a private entity that would pick that up. Is that right? Yes. Yes, an association.
Maybe or will be.
Will be? Will be.
Approved package 134, workers' compensation ombudsman programs, 155,345 and 2 FTE. Delete package 141, the central hearings unit. As I commented earlier, this restores the agency to their current budget level. This package then will be reduced in, and has been reduced in the bill that passed out of Ways and Means yesterday. Reduce the governor's budget by 491,130 to reflect 18-month actual expenditures. Reduce the budget by $15,063 for Attorney General rate reductions. Reduce the budget 115,956 to reflect agency vacancy rate projections. Approve a technical adjustment of $1. Don't say we don't balance to the penny. approve $250,000 for the cost of a consultant to study. To conduct a study on the issue of major contributing cause and approve the following budget note. The Department of Consumer and Business Services is directed to conduct research to determine the impact of major contributing cause and combined conditions on the workers' compensation system. The department is directed to provide a status report to the 71st Legislative Assembly, as well as provide a report to any interim committee on the study. And with that, approved.
Could you tell me just what does that mean exactly? Major contributing cause and combined conditions are key words. What are we talking about, basically?
Madam Chair, Senator Tro, I can give you a quick one, or we can ask Mary to come up and the issue is the work is that the actions of the worker is who's basing his or her claim on the major cause of the injury, or is there a pre-existing condition?
Okay, pre-existing conditions. Okay, and we're doing a study of that, and that study is going to be reported on. Is that it?
That's correct, Senator.
That's good.
With these recommendations, we would approve a budget of $31,825,324 other funds and $3,147,167 non-limited other funds and 271.21 FTE. In central support, approve the current service level, amend package 171, and I will calculate the actual dollar adjustments that will occur in this and make that adjustment in the amendment to the bill, so we won't have precise dollar numbers from here on out. We would fund two positions on schedule $250,000, request them to report to the Information Technology Committee on the activities of the program and the efforts that they will be making with these staff. Based on that report, they will come to the emergency board to request some limitation and limited duration FTE if needed to complete these projects. Reduce the governor's budget by 208,616 to reflect 18-month actual expenditure patterns. Reduce the governor's budget by 249 for attorney general rate reductions. Reduce the governor's budget 103,072 to reflect agency vacancy rate projections. Approve a program budget of whatever it is after I make the adjustments for the FTD and package 171. And the same for the FTE. And also approve the comment on the activities of the Division of Finance and Corporate Securities related to internet securities trading.
I'm sure.
With that, if we could move to my recommendation on the budget as a whole, and then I think we could adopt the whole thing.
All right.
It's a separate handout.
Here we go.
On House Bill 5012, I'm recommending that we adopt an agency budget of 171204600, amended by the actions that we will take with regard to the budget package on technology. 5388424 federal funds, 3626276557 non-limited other funds, and 1208.85 FTE amended by the actions that we will take with regard to that unit, the technology package. Before we made these adjustments, this was a reduction of $1.6 million, 29% for the governor's budget. As I noted earlier, it was an increase of 6 FTE to the governor's budget, which reflects the elimination of the hearings unit. Those positions have gone away as part of that hearings unit package, and we will reduce that number by 2 FTE for the technology package. And those are my recommendations.
Madam Chair, I move the LFO recommendations with the adjustments that she needs to make in the final numbers.
Senator Vitrell moves the LFO recommendations for House Bill 5012 with the adjustments. Any discussion? Any objections? Representative Ross.
I am voting against the budget because of my concerns about the spending in the Building Codes Division. I have been assured by Mike Greenberg that it's an issue that he wants to work on in the interim, and I trust him and I believe him in that regard, but I do want the opportunity to articulate those concerns both at the full committee and on the floor, and I'll vote against it for that reason. However, I want to make it clear that the rest of the budget looks very good, and I am happy with the hard work that has gone into the balance of the budget.
Any other objections? Senator Miller, I'm sorry.
Just be required as a no.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want a motion to move it to the floor, or does this motion do that?
Let's go ahead and move it to the floor. Nick wants to make a motion.
We need a motion. Yes. I'm sure I move that we send this budget as approved and adjusted by LFO to the full committee with the best recommendation.
Senator Trill moves. We move House Bill 5012 to the full committee with the due pass, the amended version. Any other no votes?
Do you want to call over on that? Do we need to?
No, I think Senator Miller is a no, as well as Representative Barrow. And with that, the motion carries. Thank you very much, and we are adjourned.